This is ESPN Radio.
I should have made this abundantly clear. When I talk about crock pots, I can't cook worth a damn. So we may have to reassess some of the ingredients that are going into these set it and forget it teams here on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. Be a part of Canty and Golic Jr. Nation and hit us up on the Dr. Pepper call-in line. That's 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. ESPN Nation's presented by Dr. Pepper. College football's back, and so are the fans. Return to glory with Fansville by Dr. Pepper, the one fans deserve. And we'll have plenty of time to get to the world of college football because it got spicy this weekend.
Oh, yeah, it did.
To be a fly on the wall today on the Paul Feinbaum show the week after an Alabama loss for the first time to one of Nick Saban's former assistants had to be incredible.
Oh, no question about it. I'd rather be a fly on the wall, though, in the team meeting that the Crimson Tide had this day, getting ready for the work week and getting ready for practice. Because, I mean, you had a touchdown lead with 5 minutes to go, and you end up taking the L? I don't even know how that's possible. Like, I thought that ball game was over when Mechie caught that touchdown pass. I thought that was a wrap, but apparently it wasn't.
Apparently Jimbo Fisher had something to say, which I feel like that portion of it, too, it being Jimbo. Like, for Nick Saban to lose to any of his former assistants is one thing. For it to be Jimbo or Nick Saban, I have to feel like hurts a little bit more for him. So we'll get into plenty of that as we go along here. We'll get into more crockpot teams. We'll also get into some of the very serious things going on with the Las Vegas Raiders and their head coach right now that certainly extends just beyond the loss to the Bears we saw this weekend. But Chris, if we're going to talk about crockpot teams, teams like the Kansas City Chiefs that I was trying to claim, hey, listen, don't worry about it. I think we finally reached the point last night. The Chiefs took a big fat L in a difficult Sunday night game delayed by weather, 38-20 to the Buffalo Bills. I think the Kansas City Chiefs have finally lost the benefit of the doubt in my eyes. I think that's what last night proved, among other things.
No, it did. And I told you I fully expected the Bills to be able to go out to Arrowhead and get the win this weekend, but I didn't think that they would be as dominant as they were, especially with that extended halftime. You know, having to sit in that small locker room, the visitor locker room in Arrowhead Stadium is tiny. To have to sit in there for over an hour and then to have to come back out and really kind of get back going again, I thought that was as impressive as anything when it comes to the different aspects that they were able to dominate that game in. But the Buffalo Bills have proven that they're the class of the AFC. And right now, you got to say that they're in the driver's seat to be in control of their own destiny when it comes to home field advantage and having that first round bye in the AFC playoff picture. I mean, the way that they were able to come out and dominate offense and defense yesterday, especially in that first half, you got to tip your cap to them, man. That was an impressive performance.
Now, Chris, I think especially at quarterback, like we talked about the opening four games for them. They played bad teams, the Buffalo Bills. The Kansas City Chiefs might be a bad team right now. They're a great offense by any measure, and so that defense deserves a ton of credit for stepping up, and we'll get to them in a second. But, man, Josh Allen was on some other stuff last night. I know he had been doing this against a lot of teams. I know the Chiefs' defense isn't good. But, Chris, once again, they went out and made a bad unit look bad. Josh is hurdling people, throwing balls a million miles downfield. Like, he's like a Patrick Mahomes skill set with even more as their leading rusher last night as well.
No question about it, and you saw that on display in that first drive. He had over 40 yards rushing and a touchdown in that first drive for the Bills. So, I mean, Josh Allen can do a lot of different things. I mean, he can pass with the best of them in our league. If you want to put him right there with Pat Mahomes and Justin Herbert in terms of his effectiveness in the passing game, he's capable of measuring up to those guys. But then he also brings the skill set of being a dynamic runner. I mean, it's not Lamar Jackson. It's more Cam Newton. But that's the thing that I love about Josh Allen. In the run game, he's BYOB. It's bring your own blocker. So there's a lot to like with his game, and I just think that this Bills offense is capable of even going to another level than where we saw them at last year with the addition of Emmanuel Sanders, who balled out last night, and then the emergence of Dawson Knox as kind of one of the better all-around tight ends in the game. So I like this Bills offense. And then when you see what they're capable of doing on the defensive end, being able to create all the takeaways, including the pick six that they had in the third quarter from Micah Hyde, like this is a legit football team. Like, they're one of the best football teams in the NFL. I'm not ready to crown them and say that they're the king of the mountain, but I think they're right up there with teams like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, teams like the Dallas Cowboys. Like, that's how complete this Buffalo Bills team is. Their general manager, Brandon Bean, and their head coach, Sean McDermott, have done a great job of being able to put together one of the most complete rosters, top to bottom, in the entire league.
Ken Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. That roster construction starts with the dude you mentioned who was out there. I love, by the way, the cross-racial comparisons. We don't do this enough. Josh Allen to Cam Newton is absolutely an apt comparison here. Here was the Bills quarterback in the press conference after the game talking about stepping up when they needed it the most.
It was good. I mean, it was one of those games. I was talking to some of the guys. I know we didn't have a lot of plays. We didn't have really a lot of third downs, really a lot of first downs. But we had a lot of explosive plays. Guys got open, made some unbelievable plays. E ran a great route. Dawson ad-libbing. And again, just our backs, you know, were big when they were trying to go with the cover two stuff, getting it to them and just getting it to them quick and just getting some rack after that. But our guys made some plays. And again, when you have a defense that can go out there and play against a really good offense, maybe one of the best offenses in the league, and do that, you know, it's very reassuring.
Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Chris, jerk or not jerk, saying getting a bunch of rack?
Not a jerk. I actually love it. Not a jerk. I'm here for it. I love it, man.
No,
I love it.
I think he's definitely right, though, about the approach there. And so I want to flip it to that other side because I think we expected that. It's been a Swiss cheese defense for the Kansas City Chiefs. No Chris Jones last night, a late scratch because of a wrist injury that he's still been dealing with. It sounded like he was a true game time decision. They're going to need to improve there. That's going to be a big part of it, is the right people getting healthy, because that's never been a great defense. But top to bottom on the other side, Chris, Mahomes and this offense were number one in a lot of metrics coming into this game. And this Buffalo team sat back. They put two high safeties back there. They kept everything in front of them and said, we're not going to let you and Tyreek Hill beat us deep. I looked at that game and I thought something looked like there was wrong with Patrick Mahomes. Like, some of the usual grand plays that we had seen from him were balls fluttering and dying, balls hitting the dirt in ways that did not look healthy. Now, I'm not saying that. I'm not speculating. I don't know anything. But, Chris, was that more a product of Buffalo on defense, or did you see something with Pat Mahomes that kind of piqued your interest?
No, I think that's more on the Kansas City Chiefs side of things, and that's kind of the game plan that the LA Chargers and the Baltimore Ravens executed as well. Like, they decided they were going to put two high safeties out there, which is not characteristics of either defense, and they decided they're going to make Kansas City be patient in terms of taking some of the underneath throws and being methodical in their approach and being able to put together scoring opportunities. And so far, the Chiefs have shown you that they're not a team that's capable of being able to do that, because you've got multiple turnovers in the three defenses that have chosen to take that approach. They had two turnovers against the Baltimore Ravens. They had four against the Chargers. Another four spot last night against the Bills. So, I mean, that's kind of the book on this Chiefs offense now. It's a big play outfit, and they got a lot of explosive pieces. But if you decide to make them be patient, force them to take a little more time than they want to, put together 8, 10, 12 play drives, they've shown that they're going to make those mistakes and give you opportunities for takeaways and to create negative plays. So, that's something that Pat Mahomes and that Chiefs offense has to get figured out. But up until this point in the season, they have yet to be able to show that they're able to be patient and take what the defense gives them. So that's something that Andy Reid's going to have to get straightened out with that team. But I don't know that their defense is going to give them a whole lot of time to be able to do that, because they are god-awful.
That is an issue for this team. Coming up in about 30 seconds, though, I'm going to dump a little bit of cold water on a lot of the Kansas City hot takes. I think there is something we need to be reminded of as we head into the rest of the season with this team. And if we're not going to say the Buffalo Bills are the best team in football, then I want to visit with the team that we believe is. We're going to do all that again about 30 seconds after this word from Barbasol. Now, in 1919, Barbasol introduced the very first no-brush, no-lather, no-rub-in shaving cream. Today, we celebrate this milestone with a fresh take on the original. Introducing Barbasol's 1919 Classic Shaving Cream, a culmination of over 100 years of shaving excellence. This new non-aerosol shaving cream, fortified with aloe, coconut oil, and shea butter to soothe and protect your skin. Pair that with a fresh and calming fragrance, this ultra-slick formula delivers a shave experience like no other. Learn more at Barbasol.com.
Not an obit by any means, but Kansas City, where are we defensively, and how big a concern is it moving forward?
I think it's a huge concern. If you look at the way they play defense tonight, it has to be alarming for them.
Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Chris Canty, and Chris, before we get to who you believe the best team in football is, and we want to hear from you, 888-729-3776, 888-SAY-ESPN on that Dr. Pepper call-in line. Who is the best team in the NFL right now, if it is not the Buffalo Bills? But for the Kansas City Chiefs, Aaron Schatz, a friend of the program, works over at Football Outsiders, does a great job there, tweeted this, and I thought it was worth noting as we look at the rest of the Chiefs season. He said, their offense is still number one in DVOA, which is their efficiency metric, and facing the third hardest schedule of opposing defenses so far through the NFL season. Remember, offense is more consistent and predictive than defense, so it's much more likely KC will play a strong offense all season than it is they'll continue to suck on defense this bad. Overall, they have played the hardest schedule so far by average DVOA of opponent. Again, by the efficiency of their opponent, their remaining schedule, 21st easiest going forward in the NFL season. So, Chris, they've been through the worst of what they're going to see so far and might have a chance to get right against far lesser competition from here on out.
Yeah, I think Kansas City will be able to right the ship. They're going to get things turned around. I absolutely expect them to be a team that's in the playoffs. I don't think they're going to be in the cellar of the AFC West for the entire year. So, yeah, I think we got to chill out when it comes to the hot takes about the Chiefs potentially missing the playoffs or anything of that nature, because they're just that good on offense. They have guys that we would consider the best at their respective positions when it comes to quarterback, tight end, and wide receiver. So, yeah, I think they're too good to not figure this thing out. But what I get concerned with is what's the upside, what's the ceiling on the Chiefs? Like, it's not going to be what we've seen in the past 3 years. This is not a team, based on how that defense is playing, that's capable of making a conference championship or making the Super Bowl. And in order for them to get to that point, their defense is going to have to make massive improvements. And so I'm not sure that personnel-wise they have the guys to be able to get that done. But, I mean, you're talking about this being an all-time bad defense. I heard the stat today. I mean, their defense is giving up over 7 yards per play. I mean, to put that into context, the greatest show on turf, the St. Louis Rams in the 2000s, they had 7 yards per play on that offense. And that's the only team to average 7 yards per play on offense for the entire season. The Kansas City Chiefs defense is turning every opposing offense into the greatest show on turf. Until that changes, this Chiefs team, in terms of their upside and where they're going to end their season and what their potential is going to be extremely limited.
It is going to be limited. I will say this, and this is always the interesting part for me, because this was a team coming off a Super Bowl berth last year with largely the same personnel, right? Like, it hasn't changed much. You added Nick Bolton, the position you thought of need in the middle of that defense at off-ball linebacker. Frank Clark hasn't played up to stuff. Chris Jones has been banged up and not as productive as you're used to here. Like, so for people that want to point to Sorensen, he's been there, and it has been difficult at times for him in space there. Like, he's on the field because this is a league that spreads the ball out a lot more. Like, I know there aren't easy answers there, Chris, but this defense has never been great. They've been opportunistic. So is there not part of you that thinks, man, if Chris Jones can come back and just be normal, not even maybe the all-time great, like, guy that broke the bank there, but if he can be, you know, the median Chris Jones that we've seen, could that be enough up front to especially kind of offset some of this back end issue?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. And certainly having more pressure players up front makes you a lot better. But, I mean, they're still awful when it comes to being able to stop the run. I mean, they're allowing opposing offenses to rush the ball 5.2 per. Like, that's a problem. They still don't do a great job of being able to take the football away. That's something that the back end of that defense led by Tyrann Mathieu, you know, historically has been good at. They haven't done that at a high level this year. So, I mean, I get being able to add a pass rusher makes everybody better. But I don't know that Chris Jones and Frank Clark, you know, trying to, you know, get things turned around as far as their individual season goes, is going to be enough for this defense to get turned around collectively. I just don't see that happening. Steve Spagnuolo, those guys can surprise me, but I think it's far more important for this offense to be able to take care of the football, because I think their margin for error gets a lot thinner knowing that their defense is sus.
So if we deal with this game and we look and say, all right, I know on my end, I asked the Buffalo Bills to overcome the Kansas City boogeyman. The Kansas City had struggled, and that if they overcame them, I would give them the respect that I thought that they were due. So I look at this team and say, right now, I'm comfortable saying the Bills are the best team in football.
Okay.
I think up front, they've gotten a lot better on defense. I think this offense has been a shredder for everyone they've put in front of it. Chris, I know you're not ready to go that far, so when you look at the best team in the NFL right now, who do you think's got that claim?
I still got to give it to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I'm not going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. I know it wasn't an impressive win against the Patriots last week in Foxborough, and I know they took the L a few weeks back against the Rams, but I still think that is the best team in football, even with their struggles in personnel on the back end. I think that front seven is so good that they'll give that secondary a little bit of time to figure it out, and then offensively, just the level that Tom Brady is playing at right now, like, and he's got so many weapons to be able to get the ball to. Yesterday, it was the Antonio Brown show. But, I mean, he can get it to Mike Evans. He's got Chris Godwin. Like, they just have a glut of weapons to be able to spray the ball around to. I mean, Tom Brady throws for over 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. Hard to believe that that's the first time that that's ever happened to him in his career. But, I mean, that's how good Brady has been to this point this year. Much better than he was at this point last year. Matter of fact, probably better than he was at any point last year. So, I mean, this Tampa Bay Buccaneers team, to me, is still the best outfit in football. And then right behind them, I would have the Dallas Cowboys and the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, that Dallas Cowboys team, Chris, I think is going to get more and more steam in this conversation because I'm with you. Tie goes to the runner on this for Tampa. They're the ones holding the trophy still. Tom is playing at an elite level here. For Dallas, I think the interesting part of this discussion becomes the defense because I know that group was banged up, and we'll get to the Giants and some of their issues coming up here in a little bit. We'll hopefully talk to Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter, in about 10 minutes about the situation because that team is an absolute mash unit right now. But all that being said, Chris, that defense, we talked about improving week after week. Like, we're getting to the point where they might just be flat out good. Like, Trevon Diggs, one of the best defensive backs in the NFL, is setting Cowboys records early in his career here.
Do we have to call him the best corner in football now? I mean, is there a corner that's playing as good as Trevon Diggs right now today?
I don't think playing as well, like, again, if this is about production, no one's matching this right now. 5 straight games with an interception, 6 overall on the season. No one has been this productive. He's a former wide receiver at Alabama, so all of the ball skills translating into a guy that's done exactly what this defense needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the interception he had yesterday, he flat out baited Mike Glennon into throwing that ball. Like, C.J. Board is running a post route, and he's basically baiting him and kind of in that trail position and trusting and having confidence in his recovery speed to be able to make a play on that football. Like, that was one of those traps that he just laid out there for the quarterback, and Mike Glennon stepped right into it. But, I mean, Trevon Diggs has just been unbelievable. I mean, so much so to the point where Dak Prescott says in practice he doesn't even throw in his direction. Like, that's how good Trevon Diggs is. And, I mean, I'm ready to say it, man. Like, this dude is the best quarterback in football right now. Like, he just is. There is no corner that's playing at that level right now. And so I didn't expect to see that from the Dallas Cowboys. I didn't expect to see that from him this season. But I think that's credit to those players taking that next step now that they have a little more experience under their belt. And then being able to have Dan Quinn, their defensive coordinator, the one that orchestrates everything. Like, this team actually believes, that unit believes. And if they continue to improve from week to week and keep taking the ball away like they are, this Cowboys team is going to be tough to stop.
Chris, I mean, do we owe that Cowboys defensive unit more respect? I mean, from where they were last year to this year, what they've been able to accomplish?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the biggest turnaround in the National Football League for any one unit or any one player. Like, the difference in the Dallas Cowboys defense this season versus where they were last year is the biggest turnaround in the National Football League, and I don't think it's particularly even close. Like, that defense has completely transformed, and to Mike McCarthy's credit, he said that. Like, he said that he hadn't been a part of a team that's had a turnaround with a player or a unit like what we've seen from the Dallas Cowboys defense under Dan Quinn. So, you know, credit where credit is due. Will McClay, their senior personnel director, being able to get the right pieces, and then Dan Quinn being able to put those pieces in place in order to create this disruptive unit. Because, I mean, there really isn't much that they can't do at a high level. Like, this is a really impressive defense.
It's gotten even better as the season's gone along, and you're right. That is going to be one of the most improved units we see this season. I'll give you one more as it pertains to most improved units in a little bit when we talk about another one of the AFC elite. But coming up next, We got to see how the other half is living right now, because as good as it is waking up in Dallas this morning, it is that bad waking up in New York. We will assess the damage next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
I'm not going to any medical diagnosis. I saw him in the locker room afterwards right there. Just checked on him in terms of where he'll go toward next week. Dan, I don't have an answer for you right now. We'll see where he goes. Obviously, we're all hopeful that he'll be back and he'll be healthy. We'll see where our medical at a number of positions going forward for this week.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're brought to you by Goodyear. Making the plays that move you forward. Goodyear, more driven. That dejected Joe Judge assessing the damage from the Giants' loss to the Cowboys, because on the field was one thing, but who ended up off the field ended up being the story. And for more on that, we head to the Goodyear hotline to talk to Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter. And Jordan, we appreciate the time. A brutal game, adding injury to insult on the field here. Got a lot to run through, but let's start with the head of all this. Daniel Jones, the quarterback, leaves with a concussion. Scary moment there as he was wobbled on the field for sure. What's the latest we've heard on him and his status a day after this game?
Yeah, I mean, look, Giants lost three big players yesterday, but I was, you know, speaking to some people, and it doesn't look like this, like any of them are going to be like real long-term injuries. Like, you're looking at like at a week or two on most of these guys. So in the grand scheme of things, probably not the end of the world. Now, granted, it looked ugly when Daniel Jones was stumbling on the field, but he was, you know, in the final minutes of the game, he was outside on his feet talking to his parents, having a lengthy conversation with them. And from what I was told, he was in good spirits. And so, you know, you never know with the concussion part of it, of how guys heal, how they recover, or how quick it's going to be. But the early returns were fairly optimistic on Daniel Jones.
Jordan, another ugly scene from yesterday's game. Late, Kadarius Toney catches a pass and has a little bit of yak, a run after catch. And then he ends up getting into it with one of the Cowboys defenders, throws a punch, and then gets ejected from that game. I know you put it out there on Twitter that he's not going to be suspended by the league. Do you have any more insight as to if the Giants plan on giving any kind of discipline toward Kadarius Toney, given Joe Judge's words post-game about it?
Yeah, I don't know. We haven't really gotten that far yet. You know, everyone's just kind of filtering into the building yet. I'm sure Joe Judge had a, you know, a discussion with him this afternoon. You saw Kadarius Toney having a public apology out there. And look, Joe, we don't need to guess how Joe Judge felt about it, right? I mean, they put the camera on him, and you saw him basically throwing Kadarius Toney off the field before he was actually ejected. I'm sure he knew he was going to be ejected because he straight up, you know, pulled the trigger and was cocked back and threw a full punch on the field. I think it'll be one of these we'll deal with it internally kind of things, but I'm not sure. I would be kind of surprised at this point with the situation the Giants are in as well. Remember, Kenny Galladay is banged up. Sterling Shepard and Darius Slayton look like they're probably going to come back this week, but it's not like the Giants have all their guys and have the luxury of saying, you know what, we could discipline him by, let's say, benching him for the first half or benching him for this game, which I don't see happening, against the Rams, by the way, this Sunday. So we'll see how it kind of pans out. But I would be surprised if it's anything that we see in regards to discipline that stems into Sunday's game.
Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're talking to Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter. You mentioned none of these injuries that we talked about here, whether it is Daniel Jones, whether it is Kenny Galladay, Saquon Barkley, expected to be long-term. But how does this affect the evaluation process for Daniel Jones in this a critical year and really for Joe Judge and this team in the juncture they're at now?
Yeah, well, this has to go into the evaluation of Daniel Jones. Let's be honest. He's missed games now in all 3 years of his career as a starter right now. So, I mean, that's part of the deal. I mean, he is not shy about putting himself in difficult situations. And I'm sure you guys probably agree with me on this. Look, I give him a lot of credit. He's a tough dude. He's tough as hell. But there are things you don't want your quarterback to do. You don't want your quarterback to take hits unnecessarily near the sideline. Now, I get it. He was trying to get in for a touchdown. But when you're a quarterback, you know, maybe go towards the pylon and try to reach the ball out as you're going out of bounds. Things where you're not actually lowering your head and trying to run over it. You wonder if there was 2 weeks back, he had a two-point conversion, and he lowers his head and basically runs over Grady Jarrett, right? Mm-hmm. Who, by the way, is a great player in this league. And you wonder if that almost is like a bad thing in the long term, because you don't want your quarterback trying to run through defensive linemen and linebackers in this league. It's not a good way to live. So, you know, the injury part is now part of the evaluation. The fact that he will have more opportunities this year, I don't think it affects it too much. As for Joe Judge, again, at some point, this is a performance business. He's going to have to win games. It always comes down to winning games. He has the team. It seems completely bought in. They don't panic. Even when you talk to them now, they're 1-4. They were 0-5 last year. They didn't panic last year. I think he has that to lean back on as like his crutch of, hey, this is why it's going to work. Guys, stay bought in. You know, it worked last year when we were 0-5. We did slap it back together. They were what? They went 6-5 the rest of the way, right? Because they went 6-10. So he has that to kind of lean on.
Jordan, I want to talk about something that did work last year. It's not working now, and that is this Giants defense, particularly up front. The Cowboys ran it up for over 200 yards on the ground yesterday. This defense just hasn't been the same. Last year, they were a top-10 outfit. What has been the explanation from the Giants internally about their struggles on the defensive side of the ball, and how does Patrick Graham plan on getting that thing fixed?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're sitting there scratching their heads just like us a little bit. I mean,
okay.
You know, like, we're sitting there and you're looking at them and you're like, maybe they, and this is me thinking this, because I'm trying to find explanations. I'm poking guys and saying, well, you know, what's the big difference? And, then, you know, they don't really say. Now, granted, they lost Blake Martinez, so their run defense without Blake Martinez, even Jabril Peppers in there, you see the difference without those two guys. Those two guys were big pieces to what they do in the run defense. But for them to get torn up the way they have been, I think they're searching for answers just as much as we are. And to me, the thing that I keep coming back to and that I think of is saying, you know, is it possible last year that they kind of maxed out what they had? That what Leonard Williams gave you, you know, his 11 and a half sacks, great year, contract year, was the best we're going to see from Leonard Williams. With what James Bradbury gave you, where he, quite honestly, was probably a top five cornerback in the league, is that the best we're going to see from James Bradbury? And there's a couple more of those guys. So I wonder if that kind of factors into the equation. But if I know Patrick Graham, he's sitting there banging his head right now, and his number one priority is going to be figuring out how to stop the run and I think a big factor, a big thing in Jabril Peppers, he'll probably be back this week. You're going to see him play a much bigger role. He was actually getting phased out before he got injured. Now that he's injured and they learned what life is without him, I think they're going to realize we need him because he brings a certain skill set to the table, and we need that skill set or this team can't stop the run, and then you've seen it all fall apart from there since.
A lot of questions that need to be answered in a hurry if the Giants are going to be able to salvage much from this season. Jordan Renan, our ESPN Giants reporter, giving us some time. We appreciate it, Jordan. We'll talk to you soon.
You got it, guys. Have a good show, man.
All right. Lots of concern there. And listen, it's been a pretty tough season so far. The injury, certainly something we hope gets better on that front for all of those guys. Coming up next, though, I want to head to a different avenue to talk about the most toxic relationship in sports right now and the most baseball thing humanly possible that happened over the weekend. Next, here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
From the biggest names in sports.
Justin Herbert, ladies and gentlemen.
To the stories that matter.
The New England Patriots want to play that way. They want to protect
and plenty of opinions.
It's simple. Justin Fields is better, but I'm willing to.
And it starts every morning with Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max right here on ESPN Radio. Or just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Road to the World Series goes through ESPN Radio. Catch all the postseason action, well, when they decide to play. Presented by AutoZone on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Tune in for the ALDS action. The Red Sox host the Rays. Coverage begins at 6:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Canty and Golic Jr. here, presented by Progressive Insurance. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. And Chris, we have the reason I throw that barb out there. We wasn't supposed to be here, and thanks to the Houston Astros and White Sox game getting postponed due to weather, you now get to listen to us on your ESPN radios.
Yeah, it was supposed to be wall-to-wall baseball coverage this afternoon, and they were going to cover up our show, and the company went as far as to send us both emails this morning saying that we weren't going to have a show. So I'm going about planning my day. I went to the barbershop to chop it up with the fellas, talk about the weekend that was in the NFL and what happened with the upset with Bama on Saturday. And I'm driving back into the city, and I see a text message from our producer, Shannon Penn, saying, yeah, it looks like the game is going to be canceled, and y'all actually got to work today. So when we told y'all y'all had a day off earlier today, psych your mind. Mm-hmm. We got to get ready for a production meeting at 1:30 so we can do a show this afternoon.
Chris,
that all happened.
It is like this was training camp levels of you think coach is going to, because you know everyone who goes through training camp, you're waiting around for the head coach to throw you that bone, to throw you that one day where it's like, hey, you're going to get a day off. You're going to get this morning session off if it's a two-a-day, something like this. And the worst mistake that you can make for your mental health during that time is assuming that is coming. And then all of a sudden having it not show up there. All of a sudden you go into that meeting and it's business as usual. Let's go get those ankles taped and get out to the field. That is, Chris, I'm going to put that on me and on you. We assumed that baseball was going to do its thing. And we should know baseball is always going to do the weirdest thing possible when given the option.
Yeah, that's true. And that's all fair by you. But when your employer tells you that you're going to have a day off and yet you don't have a day off, is it really on you? Is it really your fault? Or is this just kind of one of those things that you just blame the baseball gods for being able to put you in this position?
I think we're going to go with the baseball gods. That's an easy spot to blame in this situation. And Chris, apparently we are not the only ones who are going to have issues with the baseball gods here on Canty and Golic Jr. Because when we look back to this weekend here, the Rays might also have a little spite and a little anger for the baseball gods. If you guys missed this one watching the afternoon slate of NFL games, you missed a doozy because Kevin Kiermaier thought that in the 13th inning of their game against the Red Sox, he was going to up this thing to a nice 5-4 lead for the Rays. He hits one off right field fence in Fenway. The ball bounced on the ground before deflecting off Hunter Renfro's right hip and bouncing over the fence. The umpires got together. They ruled this is a ground rule double. So now Yandy Diaz goes back to third base. They do not score. And instead, we get a walk-off a half inning later by Christian Vasquez to go ahead and win this game for the Red Sox and now give them a chance to close this series out. So, Chris, were you able to make sense of this? Because I was watching a frantic baseball world try and make sense of this and realize this is why people either love or despise this sport at times, because somehow we are still unearthing things we didn't know were possible in the middle of high-stakes games like this.
Yeah, full disclosure, I didn't watch it in real time. This is one of those I had to go back and check the highlights, and I guess you'd have to consider it a low light depending on which side you're on.
Yeah.
But when I saw it, it was just like, okay, that actually makes sense. The player being a part of the field and the ball bouncing off of him and into the stands, like it makes sense for a ground rule double, takes the run away, and then it puts the Red Sox in a position to take control of this series. Like I actually understood the ruling by the umpires, but this is one of those series, Gojo, in full disclosure, like I just want both teams to lose. Like I wish both teams had to lose, had to be declared losers in the ALDS and nobody would be able to advance. But I mean, one of these teams is eventually going to play the Houston Astros, and I can't imagine which team would be the worst of the two scenarios. So I don't know. This is one of those I want everybody to lose.
Hate.
Yeah, man. I can't help it.
Chris Canty's got some beef there, certainly, with these teams. Jeff Passan, our ESPN MLB insider, was on SportsCenter last night with Michael Eaves talking about, do the Rays have beef with this call?
The Rays have reason to feel jobbed, but they feel jobbed because of misfortune as opposed to a rule being interpreted incorrectly.
Correct.
The reality of the situation is the umpires called the rule like it should be called. Now, should this be a rule? Should it be if you misplay a ball, you get rewarded for it? No, probably not. But there's a reason that the rule book is written in stone right now, and if it gets changed this offseason, well, then it still doesn't help Tampa Bay right now.
Yeah, that ain't going to do much for you. That's like when the NBA sends out that two-minute report, or the NFL at the end sends you the letter the next day, and it's like, we're sorry we got this call wrong. Whole lot of good that does. So again, for more on that, tune in the AL Division Series action. The Red Sox host the Rays. Coverage coming up right after us, 6:30 Eastern, here on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app, because we had to be here. Coming up next, though, we will get to an email involving John Gruden that he's got to answer for now. Why his answers so far have not been good enough.